Hey everybody, it's Brock Falk, and I want to thank you for listening to this message from Heritage Church of Christ. We would be thrilled to share more content like this with you and make it easy for you to share it with others. You can find more messages like this on our podcast, or you can download our smartphone app by searching for Heritage Church of Christ in your app store. But most importantly, I hope this message encourages you to take a next step toward a thriving relationship with Jesus. Enjoy.
When I think back to my days in high school, I figure I was probably like most kids in that I never really got very excited about the schoolwork. I mean, I was focused on other things in those days. I was focused on playing soccer. I was focused on hanging out with my friends. I was focused on part-time jobs and all of that kind of stuff. And so schoolwork, like none of it ever excited me. And I know there were a few in my class who got really, you know, like jazzed about the things that we were learning, but that just didn't happen to me. And it seemed like especially I was frustrated every year in high school by the English classes that I had to take. Any of you that can relate to that, I know there's a couple of English teachers in the room. It's not your fault. It's absolutely not your fault. But I was frustrated by those classes, and it especially seemed to me that the literature that they were requiring us to read every year just always struck me as being so, so boring. I think being required to read multiple novels in the course of 1 year kind of caught me off guard. Like, I wasn't expecting that going in, and so that was kind of a shock to my system when I started high school anyway. I wasn't accustomed to spending that much time reading, and so then when I got to the freshman first day of school and showed up to English class, and she passed out kind of a syllabus of everything that was going to happen, the list of books was longer than what I wanted to read. And I don't mean like the books. I mean the list was too long. You know, like I didn't want to read that whole thing, much less the books that were on the list. And I'm not sure what kind of literature I thought that they were going to be assigning, but it definitely was not the kind of literature that I would have chosen. Now, I know now that the books that we were reading, they were award-winning books. I mean, some of these were literary classics. We were reading acclaimed pieces of literary fiction like Ethan Frome and Silas Marner. We were reading coming-of-age novels like On the Road and Lord of the Flies, and we read some books that had some great, important social commentary that we needed to learn about. I mean, things like Fahrenheit 451 and Animal Farm. And I know some of you, I've just named a few of your favorite books, and I get it. But at that time, those authors and their awards meant absolutely nothing to me. I hated reading those books. I hated how long it took, how much time it took away from my other priorities. I hated how confusing the vocabulary was. And so I read just to get the grade. I finished the books because I had to. I applied the bare minimum amount of required effort to get the grades that would keep my parents from being overly concerned, right? Like that was the mark that I was aiming for. But I didn't really get what those books were about. Like I didn't really fully comprehend the themes or the narrative arc. I didn't internalize the cultural critique that some of them were trying to make. I was there to get a grade. And so I took what I thought I needed and only what I thought I needed from each of those books to get the grade accomplished. And I missed out on the value in all of those pieces of literature. Now, I know for some of us, high school English seems like a long time ago, and it doesn't seem like that big a deal to have missed out on the themes of a few books that most people in history never got the chance to read anyway. But I think it's a tragedy, and I think you'll agree, I think it's a tragedy when someone misses a good opportunity. When someone misses an opportunity to grow or to develop, and there's a moment that's coming for you later this week. There's a moment that's coming for you and me later this week with the Thanksgiving holiday, with our entire community, our entire culture focused on this attitude and this idea of thankfulness. There's a moment, an opportunity that's coming up for you and me where it would be really, really, really easy to miss the point. I mean, here we are, Thanksgiving, there's people traveling, there's families gathering, there's parades to watch and football games on TV and food to be eaten and naps to be taken. This entire week is devoted. Our national calendar is committed together to feeling and expressing gratitude. And I think it's an incredibly helpful practice to take inventory of the things that you're thankful for, to recognize and list to yourself and take note of the ways that you've prospered and the blessings that you've received. I think it's an incredibly wise thing to spend some time considering everything that you have to be thankful for. But I want to suggest to you this morning that if your discipline of thanksgiving stops at the end of your blessing list, then you will have missed the point. You will have only scratched the surface and only done the minimum that was required to observe Thanksgiving. You will have missed the point of being thankful. And worse yet, you will have missed an opportunity to grow. And I don't want that for you. And so I want to get you ready for Thursday. This morning, I want to get you prepped for this exercise of thanksgiving that we're all taking on together this week. And to do that, I want to show you a story from Jesus's life that's found in the New Testament book of Luke. And Luke is one of the accounts of Jesus's life where Luke got all of his information from people who were with Jesus, people who spent hours and weeks and months and years in Jesus's presence, eyewitnesses who were there in person to get to see the things that Jesus said and did and where Jesus went. And in Luke chapter 17, which is where our story is found this morning, Luke records part of a road trip that Jesus is taking. Actually, it's Jesus's final journey where he's headed toward Jerusalem, a place where he's anticipating being arrested and killed because of his divinity claims and because of his teaching. But along the way, Jesus frequently, on this journey by foot, he frequently finds himself surrounded by people who want to hear his teaching, or they want to keep an eye on what he's up to because they're watching to see what he's going to do next. Some of them are opponents who are trying to build a case against Jesus. And then there's people who are interested in watching or maybe even receiving a miracle that Jesus performs. And in our episode in chapter 17, beginning in verse 11, Jesus is still in Galilee, which is 60 to 80 miles north of Jerusalem, and he's traveling near the border of another region that's not part of Israel called Samaria. Now, this is an area that most Jewish people, like Jesus, avoid all the time. They stay out of Samaria because of their long-standing religious and political disagreements with the Samaritans. But Jesus does just the opposite. In fact, Jesus isn't bothered by crossing over the border into Samaria or taking a shortcut through Samaria or maybe taking the long way to go through Samaria. He consistently treats the Samaritans differently than they're accustomed to being treated by any Jewish people. He engages with them. He has constructive dialogue with them. He even makes Samaritans the hero in some of the parables that he tells to Jewish people, which really gets under their skin. But on this day, he's traveling in an area right on the border between Galilee, which is an Israelite territory, and Samaria. And he's approached by this group of 10 men who were associated with one another only because they shared a common ailment. They were all suffering from skin diseases at the same time. Now, our text calls the condition leprosy, although we are almost certain that it doesn't refer to the same disease that modern medicine would refer to as leprosy or Hansen's disease. The people in the Bible who are described as having leprosy display an entirely different set of symptoms than those who are afflicted with leprosy as we know it today. But what we can assume from this text is that all of these men had come down with contagious, acute, rash-like symptoms. And the law required that anyone who developed a rash like this had to present themselves to a priest for examination. And there was a period of isolation to see if the rash was spreading or if it was stable. And if the priest determined that this was an active infection that was spreading, then the patient was proclaimed to be ceremonially unclean and required to leave home and live outside of town until their infection cleared up. And that could take a while. And so it was common for these bands of refugees, people who had been moved away from their home, who had been displaced, to form and provide community and support for one another. I mean, most of us can only imagine what it would be like to come down with athlete's foot or eczema and be told we had to leave home and leave town and fend for ourselves against the elements while our bodies were fighting off infection without any medication to help. And so there's these 10 men, and they see Jesus, and they stood at a safe distance away, and they shouted at Jesus, and they said, "Have pity on us," which we take to be a request for healing. And verse 14 says, without much fanfare, that when Jesus saw them, he said, "Go show yourselves to the priests." And I like to picture Jesus hollering at them. I like to picture Jesus smiling as he's saying it, smiling at the sight of them gathering their things and heading to town to go see the priest. But then the text mentions a miraculous gift. It says the men discover as they're walking away, at some point on their journey toward the priest, they discover that their skin diseases have all suddenly disappeared. The rash is gone. The sores have eased and healed. And we don't know how quickly this happened. We don't know how far along they were on their journey to the priest. But I want you to look at what happens next. And I think this is the reason that Luke tells us this story. Luke says in verse 15, it says that one of them, one of the ten, when he saw he was healed, came back praising God in a loud voice. And he threw himself at Jesus' feet and thanked him. And he was a Samaritan. Now, this is a significant moment. This is a man who just a short time ago was required to keep his distance from Jesus, was required to stay away from home, was required to stay out of the city. Here's a man who presumably had not been able to be around his family in quite a while. Here's a man who had a lot of catching up to do and a lot of lost time to make up for and a life to get back to, things that were urgent, things that he needed to do. But he's also got a lot to be thankful for. And so he turned around and he went back to Jesus. And maybe that was a matter of a few yards. Maybe that was a matter of a couple of miles. We're not sure. But he goes back to where Jesus was. And it seems that he did this before going to the priest. He came back to Jesus worshiping loudly and dramatically. He's making a scene on the way. He's being heard from quite a distance. He's being loud with his voice, with his praise. And Luke says the man threw himself down at Jesus' feet, which makes it sound to me like he was probably moving in a hurry. He was eager to get there, and he thanked Jesus. And then Luke tells us that this man was a Samaritan, and his reappearance all by himself raises some questions. And so Jesus names the elephant in the room. He calls out the obvious to the disciples around him. Verse 17, Jesus asked, "Were not all 10 cleansed?" It almost sounds as if Jesus is asking, "Did it not work?" Like, I thought, sure, I had that figured out. I thought I did it. You know, I thought I got it right the first time. "Were not all 10 cleansed? Where are the other 9? Has no one returned to give praise to God except this foreigner?" Jesus thinks it's odd and probably a little disappointing that only 10% of the people who had just experienced this miraculous healing showed back up. But I want to stop here. And I want to have you look close and dig a little deeper and make sure you don't miss the deep meaning of this story. Because it would be so easy to treat these few verses like I treated those novels in high school and just breeze right through and miss the deeper meaning. Because when I was growing up in church, every time I ever heard this lesson taught, every time I read this lesson, this story on my own, my only takeaway was a reminder that you ought to say thank you. Like, this was about behavior. This was like a manners class, a behavior lesson on remembering to be kind and to be gracious. You didn't want to be like those 9 lepers who didn't come back and say thank you to Jesus. And so every time I heard this lesson taught in church as I was growing up, it was always a reminder, okay, little kids, don't forget, when somebody does something really nice to you, you should be thankful for it. And I think that's valuable. I think manners are valuable. I think saying thank you is a great habit to develop. And it turns out it's not an easy one to develop in your children. But I don't think that's what Jesus is disappointed about. I don't think Jesus is disappointed that the other 9 lepers didn't come back to him and say thank you. In fact, they were doing exactly what he told them to do, weren't they? He told them, go show yourselves to the priests. They were following instructions. What did the Samaritan do? He disobeyed an order. He did not do what Jesus asked him to do. And the other thing I noticed is that all 10 of them got blessed. All 10 of them got healed, right? I mean, the healing was not conditional on their coming back to Jesus. All 10 of them saw their skin disease disappear. They were healed and presumably got to re-enter their families and re-enter their communities and go back to the way things were before. And I don't think Jesus was so emotionally needy that he required their affirmation for his healing work. I don't think Jesus was sitting there thinking to himself, well, I deserve at least a thank you. I don't think Jesus was upset that he didn't get the credit and that he didn't get a pat on the back. But what we find in the text is that saying thank you is not the behavior Jesus was calling attention to, right? Jesus was not upset that they didn't come say thank you to him. If you read it again closely, what you find is that Jesus was excited that this one healed person had come back giving praise to God. Jesus was excited that the experience of physical healing had led to an opportunity for a spiritual breakthrough for this one person. That the experience of physical healing had created an opportunity for a spiritual connection in this Samaritan man's life. Jesus was excited that this man's most pressing physical need was addressed. And when it was addressed, it moved him to connect to the source of the healing. It moved him not just to enjoy the blessing, not just to bask in the healing, but to turn around and connect with the source of that power and that gift. This Samaritan man had reflected to himself, and in maybe just a split second, he had decided to respond because he had developed an awareness that the other 9 in his group had not. And I don't think Jesus was disappointed in the other 9 because they didn't say thank you. I think he was sad because they missed an opportunity to connect with God on a whole new level. I think he was sad because they just didn't get it. Because they did what I did with those novels in high school. They got just what they thought they needed out of it. They got just what they came for. And then put it down and walked away. And I think Jesus was grieved that the power of God was on display in their midst. And they settled for having their skin cleared up. My 11-year-old son asked me this week if I'd heard the one about the guy who was late for a job interview. And he was driving all around downtown trying to find a parking space, and he wanted to make sure that he got to his interview on time, but every parking space that he could find was full. And so finally, in his desperation, as the deadline for his meeting approached and he was thinking to himself about how bad it would look if he showed up to the interview late. In desperation, he prayed to God and he said, God, if you'll help me find a parking space right now, I will totally change my life and I will do whatever you ask me to do. And right then, a car just a couple of spaces up backed out and the clouds parted and a beam of sunlight shined right down on that parking space while every other space was in the shadows. And the man looked up to the sky and he said, never mind, I found one. See, it's the story of a man who he got the blessing. He got the parking space. He got what he came for. But he missed an opportunity to connect with the giver of the good gift that he just received. He missed an opportunity to take that blessing to the next level. He missed an opportunity to look at what had just happened and instead of focusing all of his attention on the blessing itself, to actually make the turn and pay attention to the giver of the blessing. And this happens all the time. In fact, I'm convinced that there is a level of access to God that's available to the recipient of every gift. But most people never discover it. Most people never discover this new connection, this new appreciation, this new relationship with God because we're so focused on the gift. There's a host of people in this room, in our world, a host of people who are sending their requests to God. And just like those lepers who yelled their request to Jesus, God have mercy, Jesus, Master, have mercy on us, they said. And here's God. God's a generous giver. God causes rain to fall on the just and the unjust, the scripture tells us. God gives blessings to every single one of his children. God gives even to those who have done nothing to appreciate him and nothing to deserve his kindness. And so we all enjoy the blessings of God and we keep sending in our requests. We keep sending in our needs and our wants and our asks for new blessings. And we love being able to call on God when we recognize something new that we need. But if we spend our entire lives basking in the bounty of God's blessings without being moved to respond in connection and devotion and worship to God, we will have missed the whole point. We will have missed the reason for the blessings we enjoy so much. We won't be able to say we got it. And I think that's what Jesus was celebrating with this one Samaritan leper who came back. I think Jesus was celebrating that the one leper who came back got the point. And so he said to the man, rise up, rise and go. Your faith has made you well. Now, it's easy to interpret that sentence and think Jesus is telling him that it's his faith that has healed his leprosy, his faith that has healed his skin disease. But don't forget, all 10 were healed. All 10 had their skin cleared up. All 10 received the blessing that it turns out was an invitation to a deeper connection with the giver of blessings. And so this man, this Samaritan leper, it turns out that he got something that the other 9 didn't. He received a blessing on top of blessing. He received the blessing that comes from recognizing the original gift and then connecting with the giver. He received the blessing that comes from recognizing what you've received and then responding to the giver. The blessing of spiritual connection and growth and wholeness and relationship. He received this realization that he had been healed, and that's one blessing. But then he was able to articulate his gratitude, and that brought with it a second blessing. And it's a blessing that most people never find, never realize. So you remember those novels that I barely read in high school? I kind of figure that the statistics from this Jesus story are similar to the ones in my English class. There were probably 90% of us who, that's all we were doing. We were just trying to get the grade. We were just trying to finish the requirements. We were just trying to keep our parents off of our backs about the grades we were bringing home on the report card. That's probably true for 90% of the ones of us in that class. But I think there were 10% who got it, who read Animal Farm and Fahrenheit 451 and Ethan Frome, and they were captivated by the themes. They connected with some of the experiences that the characters were experiencing, and they identified with the character development that was happening, and they saw themselves in the story. And it was like they were building a connection with what the author intended to say all along. And I bet most of those 10% could still tell you what those books are about. And I can't. I didn't get it. I didn't get the point of the assignment. But this opportunity that's available to us, you can get it. You can get it by transitioning your practice of thanksgiving into a practice of connection. You can get this point. You can understand what this is all about by looking at the list of the ways that you've been blessed and provided for and cared for and treated beyond what you deserve. And then making the turn and connecting to the giver of every good gift. You know, I wonder if you could explore in your mind this question. What if God's greatest blessings in your life were meant to cause you to turn toward Him? What if the checklist of requests that you've submitted and that have been responded to, what if all of the protection and all of the security and all of the privilege and all of the pleasures and all of the possessions and all of the paychecks, what if all of those things were meant to cause your heart to turn toward God? If you don't get this, then every Thanksgiving will be a little bit different. It'll almost be like giving God a grade. Like going down a checklist and thinking to yourself, well, God really showed up in this area this year, but still got this outstanding request here, God. There's a few things I still need to put in the inbox. Needs that haven't been met yet. Until you get this, that's what Thanksgiving will feel like. Like, okay, thank you, God, for all the things that have happened so far. But what's next? Let's talk about what's next. And here's this Samaritan, this foreigner, this outcast, this refugee who, totally unknown to him, he didn't know we'd be reading this story 2,000 years later, but unknown to him, he's an example for us of somebody who made the turn. Somebody who went from receiving blessing to connecting with the giver of every good and perfect gift. See, I think gratitude is the path to being made well. Gratitude is the path to a life of contentment. Gratitude is an opportunity for us to look beyond what we have to the one who says, I want to have your heart. I want to have all of you. And so my charge to you as you go into this week of Thanksgiving, as you go into the busyness, as you go into the Black Friday shopping and the Thursday night shopping and all of that kind of stuff, as you go into the family gatherings, that some of those will be really pleasant and some of those are tense, as you go into the duties that you have to take care of and the cooking that you're required to do and the house cleaning and the just wondering when are these people going to leave and all of every other thing that's involved, my charge to you, as you show hospitality, as you reflect on the things you appreciate, as you remember the ways you've been blessed, is to go beyond that list, go beyond those items, go beyond those possessions, and connect with the God who gives it all to us because of His love, because of His grace, because of His mercy for us.